Let's reconvene, please. And at Mr. Robertson. Okay, so I'd like, this is going to be item 16, in consideration of waste discharge and water recycling requirement for pure water Monterey groundwater replenishment project, Monterey County order, quiet please, order number R3-2017-003. So Mr. Robertson, please introduce the item.
So before I offer some initial comments, I'm going to defer to Mr. Delgado for a statement.
Yes, thank you, John. Although I am mayor of the city of Marina, and Marina is within the service area of the Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency, Marina is not really part of this project and stands to not receive any benefit from it, except indirectly, like the rest of us, when there's potential improvements to the overdrafting of the Carmel River, et cetera. But being that there is no direct relationship to the city of Marina, I don't have any conflict of interest, and I will have an open mind on this matter accordingly. John, Lori, does that cover it? Because I don't have the prepared statement with me.
You haven't had any personal involvement with the
right
approving this project?
Yes, I've had no personal involvement with this project until now.
That covers it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Delgado. Mr. Robertson.
Okay, so I will introduce the item. Item 16 is a waste discharge requirements for the and water recycling requirements for the Pure Water Monterey Recycled Water Groundwater Replenishment Project. This project is unique in that its source waters for treatment and recycling are from what have traditionally been considered waste waters, and we discussed this a little bit earlier in the meeting. These sources include Salinas stormwater, Salinas industrial wash water from vegetable packing facilities, and Blanco drain and reclamation ditch agricultural runoff. In addition to unique water sources, Pure Water Monterey Water will provide 3,500 acre feet of advanced treated water for recharge to the seaside groundwater basin, offsetting water currently taken from the Carmel River and aiding in Cal-Am Water's compliance with the State Water Board's cease and desist order. And this project will also provide additional water to Cascoville Seawater Intrusion Project for ag irrigation to offset groundwater pumping in that area. This creative type of project provides a great example of what strategic management of groundwater basins will look like in our future. And for that reason, we're going to spend a little bit more time with this item than it might have otherwise needed. Lastly, I'll note that there is a supplemental item in your folders covering a letter received and errata to this item. And today, John Rocky of our staff will provide a presentation, as well as the Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency.
Thank you, John. Good morning, Chairman Wolf, ladies and gentlemen of the board. My name is John Rocky. I'm the staff person as was tasked with developing the waste discharge requirements for this project. The item we're presenting to you this morning is the Pure Water Monterey Advanced Water Purification Facility and Groundwater Replenishment Project. The Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency, in partnership with Monterey Peninsula Water Management District, has developed the Pure Water Monterey Groundwater Replenishment Project to deliver, as John said, 3,500 acre feet per year of purified recycled water to recharge the seaside groundwater basin. Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency is a joint powers authority operating in the Monterey Bay Area with 11 members, including Monterey County, City of Salinas, and nine others. The discharger in the context of this order is Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency. With that, Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency staff will now present an overview of the project. And following their presentation, I'll talk about specifics of the order before you this morning. So with that, I'll introduce Mike McCullough.
Good morning. Before we get started, I just wanted to send our general manager, Paul Sciutto, sends his regrets. He would be the one presenting this today, but he's actually in Sacramento talking to some of your colleagues and some of the other staff members about Pure Water Monterey. So we wanted to let you guys know that he would love to be here. I really appreciate your introductory comments today about the wastewater and solutions, and Board Member Gray is talking about opportunities. I think this project kind of encompasses all those. It's just a really exciting time, not only in where we are and in the community, but also the region of really utilizing these water resources. So we really appreciate this opportunity today. And in attendance today, we have members of our team, and it takes kind of a village to kind of get a project to this point. So I just wanted to make some introductions there. We have Ed Lynn, Shane Trussell, John Kinney, and then from the PCA, Denise Connors from Larry Walker. And then from the MRWPCA, we have Bill Coker, Steve Hogg, and Allison Imamura. And so we'll be able to answer some questions if we get to that point. So just kind of a quick overview. You know, it's no secret that we've had numerous water supply issues in and around the Monterey Peninsula and the Salinas Valley. And these supply issues have obviously presented a number of obstacles for us. But those obstacles are also opportunities. And I think we're demonstrating just a great way to have successful collaboration with a number of organizations, public entities even, in and around the area. And then I think we can't discount this enough, that this is a regional solution for both the peninsula and the Salinas Valley. And as John just mentioned, you know, this we're having an opportunity to provide more water, not only for the peninsula, but also for the agriculture users. And so I think that's really a positive for us. So John just talked about, you know, the cease and desist order that the state issued, and obviously this is a new water supply that can help enhance that existing supply that we have. There have been some renovations or some revisions to the cease and desist order, and so those milestones, you know, need to be met in order to not have the draconian cuts that are coming. But I think, you know, Pure Water Monterey is one of those milestones that get us to the way. And one of the things that, you know, we're on the precipice here is that this project can be implemented sooner than some of the other concepts that are out there. And so that's really important for the communities. On the peninsula specifically, you know, the cease and desist order is kind of the cloud that's hanging over everybody's head. But we also have an adjudicated water basin and seaside that, you know, we draw some water from as well. And then from there, you know, you kind of move over to the Salinas River. You know, we have Salinas seawater intrusion. You know, there's the Monterey Bay Sanctuary, and then some of the pollutant loads that get into Salinas River, which end up in the Monterey Sanctuary. So, you know, these are some of the supply issues that we have and some of the obstacles that we're looking to overcome. And we just like to illustrate how big of a cut that some of the peninsula folks are looking at if other water supplies aren't being implemented in a timely fashion. And so since the cease and desist order, as some of the milestones have kind of been delayed a little bit, you can see that that huge water shortage is going to be delayed just a little bit. But, you know, you're looking at roughly more than half of the water supply being removed. And so what Pure Water Monterey would do is help build back some of that water available into the community. And so this pie chart really sums it up really well as to what there currently has and what hopefully will be in the future of traditional water sources of mainly the Carmel River and then the Seaside Basin. And this is mainly for the Monterey Peninsula water customers. with some of these other projects being brought online, you know, you can see the diversification that could occur. And groundwater replenishment could be up to 22% of that new water supply. I think that this is just a great opportunity to talk about just a collaboration that has occurred. You know, we could never have done this alone, and the water management district that John talked about earlier just came alongside us and helped us along the way, supporting us financially. But I think it's really embraced the integrated approach that, you know, the state board and the regional board is championing of, you know, looking at water resources in a more holistic fashion. And I think this project has done that. As you can see from the number of logos that are represented here, these are the agencies that we work closely with to get us where we are today. And I think there's also, you know, you just have good luck. And I think, you know, with the drought and conservation that's gone on, I think it's provided us with that opportunity. And so the regional treatment plant, we have a dry weather capacity of 29.6 million gallons a day, and that's permitted through this board. And as you can see through the early 2010 and 11 and 12, you know, we're kind of starting in the throes of the drought. And just the, you know, the peninsula and the residents in our service area really responded well with conservation and water rates and things like that. And just the flows into our treatment plant just continue to drop. And so in 2013, you know, I think Mr. Moore talked about, you know, the driest year on record. You know, those are the lowest flows we've seen on record come into the treatment plant. And so that's just not quite half the capacity that we have in our treatment plant. And so that's an opportunity that we could take some of these other water sources and bring them in for treatment. And so in response to the drought, so you've seen, almost a 3 million gallon drop a day that was during the growing season going out for recycled water for growers. And so in 2014, we partnered up with the city of Salinas to bring that water supply in to help augment those supplies of recycled water that was being lost through conservation. And so I think that's just an illustration of working together to help solve a problem in the short term. And the water project that we're talking about today isn't new to California. You know, this slide is from a third party of water reuse. And it's just identifying all the other type of potable reuse projects that are in around the state that are being planned or permitted at this time. Obviously, you're very familiar with Cambria and what they've gone through as the Central Coast and kind of been ground zero for the drought. But just through Southern California and, you know, up into Northern California is where these reuse projects are being implemented. And so, you know, this isn't new, and it's really exciting. This next slide is just kind of an overview of just some of the proximity and just the geography of where the projects are and what the needs are. And so you can kind of see with the green, that's the peninsula and the domestic drinking water need. And then the purple area is the Kestrel Seawater Intrusion Project. And you can kind of see the need for additional waters in that as well. But I think what both of these communities have in common is that, you know, water supply issues are incredibly important for the economic region of both. You know, the agriculture community is over almost $5 billion economy, and tourism is, you know, over $2 billion. And so it's really important that these water supply issues have a credible solution. So I'm not going to read all through this slide, but, you know, this slide is just kind of illustrating that we've been working cooperatively with the regulatory entities to move this project through in a timely manner. We've worked with the staff, the regional board, and we've worked with the staff at the state board, making sure that the processes that we're proposing are credible, and there's plenty of redundancy, and that, you know, all of the steps have been taken to move us through this process in a timely fashion. And that, you know, that can go back to the engineering report. It goes back to the environmental impact report, and we've been really focused on that. And so just, you know, some of the findings is that, you know, the water would meet or exceed, you know, basin plan standards, drinking water standards. And, you know, part of it is that all this water is going to go back into the basin. It's not going to be direct or anything. It's indirect. And then there's multiple barriers for redundancy, and there's plenty of monitoring that will go on, and I think John will talk about that a little bit later as a staff report. And just, you know, the requirements that, you know, to meet public health and safety that these projects require. So in a nutshell, Pure Water Monterey is looking to identify these various source waters, bring them in for recovery and treatment, and to implement full advanced treatment, which is kind of the standard, the industry standard that the Department of Drinking Water requires. One of the interesting things about Pure Water Monterey is that we are proposing a treatment process that is above what the state drinking water standards are. And then, you know, replenishing the Seaside Basin, whereas every gallon that we put in, Cal-Am can take that gallon out. And so the source waters are what kind of makes Pure Water Monterey unique. You know, most of the projects around the state are utilizing just secondary treated wastewater as their primary source of water, i.e. Orange County. That's, you know, they take all the secondary treated wastewater and they treat that for their project down there. And so we want to use secondary treated wastewater as well. The other thing that we're implementing is utilizing the Salinas industrial water that comes from a lot of the processing units over there in Salinas. They have a separate conveyance system, and the conveyance system just ironically goes right by our Salinas pump station. And so it's between me and you, Board Member Young, is where this connection could be made, and that connection has been made. And then we're looking at connecting and collecting urban stormwater runoff. So for a number of years now, we've been collecting and treating dry weather flows from the city of Pacific Grove, and now we're moving into looking to collect dry weather flows from the city of Salinas as part of this project. And then agriculture drainage water. So this is waters from the Blanco Drain and the reclamation ditch. I think we went through an extensive water rights process through the state board to get the water rights for extraction from these sources. And, you know, we're right there awaiting a signature to implement those permits. And so just a kind of quick overview of what Pure Water Monterey will go through. So all of those water sources will come into the headworks, and all of them will go through primary and secondary treatment. And then from that point on, then we'll make a diversion into the amount that we need for Pure Water Monterey. We'll go through advanced purification. And so you see here just kind of some cartoons of what the different treatment processes look like. And so the one that is different than what is recommended from the state drinking water is our ozone pretreatment. And so we'll subject it to ozone after secondary treatment, then membrane filtration, reverse osmosis, and then a final disinfection phase. And once the water has gone through that treatment processes, we'll put it into a pipe and we'll send it over to the Seaside groundwater basin. We'll use the deep groundwater injection wells and then have some small, shallower vadose home wells. The bulk of the water will be injected into the deep aquifer there in Santa Margarita. And through our modeling of the processes, you know, the state requires at least 6 months residence time in the aquifer. We're modeling, you know, at least 10 months, most of the time a year, residence time in the basin. And Mr. Moore talked about the stormwater grant that we just recently received for implementation, and we're working with the city of Salinas. And I think the thing that we're really trying to emphasize with Pure Water Monterey is just you utilize existing infrastructure. You know, I kind of talked to you about how much capacity we have in our treatment plant. Of, you know, almost half of it is available for treatment. Well, that means there's also, you know, available space and pipelines and things like that. And so this is a really easy schematic to look at to say, you know, what are the things that are going to be needed to bring these other water sources in? And so the only things that we're looking at that need to be built are the blue ones, so the proposed Blanco Drain diversion and the reclamation ditch diversion. The agriculture wash water diversion was paid for by the city of Salinas, and that's already in place. And the stormwater diversion, as you can see where the little money signs are, That's kind of a clever way to say that's where the grant money from Prop 1 is going to go to help us implement some of these structures, and so to reduce the cost of the overall project. So some of the secondary objectives that we've looked at is just, you know, not only is the water for the Seaside Basin, but it's also, you know, we're bringing more water into the treatment plant. And so we're looking to utilize that for agriculture irrigation during the growing season. And you can see that, you know, by bringing in some of these other water sources, those pollutant loads that weren't were going out to the bay are now going to be, you know, removed through some of the treatment that we provide. And the third bullet point there is minimizing new electricity demands. And I think this is kind of talks about the partnerships and the collaboration is that, you know, our next door neighbor is the regional landfill. And we've entered into a power purchase agreement to where we're going to buy landfill biogas to help supply the power to run Pure Water Monterey. And so, you know, those are the types of opportunities that you get when you embark on projects like this. As we mentioned, more water for agriculture. You know, we currently kind of run at about 14,000 acre feet a year of producing recycled water. But with these other water sources, you know, you can potentially project 2,000 to 4,000 more acre feet that could be utilized during the growing season. And then, you know, during the outfall, you know, most of the water that we generate in the winter just goes to secondary treatment and into the outfall for discharge. Well, by using some of that secondary treatment water, we're hoping to reduce the amount of water that we can discharge into the future. Another additional benefit that Pure Water Monterey is going to provide is that during the wet years, like this year, if the project was online, we could produce another 200 acre feet of recycled water to inject into the Seaside Basin. And then, you know, if drought conditions persist, you know, we could reduce the amount of water that's being injected and so that we make more water available for the growers during drought conditions. And so this is kind of a bank drought reserve that we've worked cooperatively with the stakeholders, the agriculture community, to come up with. Another thing that the agency and our partners implemented was a demonstration facility. I know some of the staff has gone by and been able to see that. This demonstration facility has really done three things for us. Is that one, it's kind of allowed our staff to kind of be familiar with some of the technologies that will be implemented. The second thing is that we're able to utilize and look at different filters. We're doing some research, some testing on some of that water. And then the third thing is just the ability to do outreach and with the community and education. So it's been a really helpful tool for us, and that facility is open today. And, you know, anybody that wants to take a tour surely can. So in closing, you know, Pure Water Monterey is a multi-benefit project. It's helping out not only the peninsula but also the Salinas Valley. And as I showed you earlier, it's just a testimony to the work that multiple agencies can come together and implement a project that is a win for the community. So at this point, we're open for any questions you might have, and if I can't answer them, I know our team members can. So thank you for your time.
Oh, go ahead, Mayor Delgado.
Thank you, Mike, for that presentation. I asked our staff during a briefing we had about a week ago about the potential for this process to treat and remove legacy pesticides and any other high-priority pollutants. Can you give us a summary of how that will happen?
Sure, and that's why we have a village here. So I'm going to turn this question over to Shane Trussell, and he'll be able to answer that. He's from Trussell Technologies.
Thank you.
Morning, members of the board. Actually have some slides prepared on this. So considering these source waters, this is something that we've taken very seriously from the initiation of this project and really the vision to bring these source waters in. So it's something that we evaluated extensively in the environmental review, the design, and through the permitting process. So we've actually sampled these waters and done testing on them. We have tested a few legacy pesticides in the source waters that will be received at the treatment plant. Of those that were detected, they were detected well below the drinking water standards or any level that would be of concern for drinking. And if they were found to be at or above the drinking water standard, it would be below that after the regional treatment plant. So this is prior to even being received to the advanced treatment facility. So before going through the ozone, the membrane filtration, reverse osmosis, and advanced oxidation. So we really have a very robust treatment process in place to take care of those pesticides. But to be honest, we found very few of them when about sampling over 25, and very few were even detected. So they'll all be below drinking water standards, really, after the RTP, and then the advanced treatment's going to provide even more removal. You see all those nines. We tend to talk in log removal, so that's almost an additional 4 logs of removal. So meaning it's moving it down zeros on the decimal place. So redundant treatment, really, as far as the pesticides are concerned. A couple of, I guess, highlights just to put it in perspective. This is the DDT. This is the amount found in the primary effluent at the RTP, so coming into the regional plant. It's then below the drinking water detection limit, leaving the regional plant. And there are values for ozone and MF. They were just well below anything that you would see here. Similar for Deldrin, we actually were able to detect it. It's, again, below the drinking water detection limit. And by the time we move through the secondary effluent, so that's the regional treatment plant, then you get into the advanced treatment, you can see the levels going further and further down. And this doesn't include the two most powerful tools we have in advanced treatment, which is the RO and the advanced oxidation. Those are the processes that are actually specified in the groundwater recharge regulations for this type of project where you inject recycled water in the ground. Those are the tools we use, really, to remove organics like this. So I'm highlighting that this information is prior to that level of treatment. So this is all the removal ahead of that.
So on this graph you have there, which bar is after the regional treatment plant, and which bar, if it's there, is after the advanced treatment?
So the advanced treatment bar is not there. The regional treatment plant is the second bar. Do I have a pointer on this? Yep, right there.
Okay.
That's the effluent from the regional treatment plant.
And what?
This is the first step in the advanced treatment, ozone. And then that's the after it's been membrane filtered, and it would be further and further removed as it goes through the advanced treatment.
Okay. So it's correct to say that the regional treatment plant reduces these legacy pesticides to well below the drinking water limits, and then the advanced treatment further reduces them or removes them 98%,
yep,
as compared to when they arrive in the advanced treatment process.
Back up. It's more, 99.98% removal.
Gotcha. So, all right, thank you.
More than 3 logs.
All right, and then my other question was not like this question. It was to ask what role Marina Coast Water District has in this project. What's their function?
We'll let Bill Coker take a stab at this one.
Thank you, Mayor Delgado. Yeah, Marina Coast Water District applied for an SRF loan to complete a conveyance pipeline that will connect the regional treatment plant or the advanced water purification plant with the injection well field. They had already started that years ago during the construction of General Jim Moore Boulevard. So much of that has already been put in the ground. So Marina Coast opted to finish that up, and then they would take some of that water eventually for their what used to be called the reclaimed portion of the RUOP project for use on Fort Ord. It remains uncertain as I stand here as to whether or not Marina Coast is going to be able to get that SRF loan in a timely way that will allow us to move forward. If they don't, we've worked with the finance staff at State Water Resources Control Board, and they have indicated a willingness to have us, meaning PCA, the MRW-PCA, actually fund it through that, through our SRF loan, and Marina Coast would continue to be a partner in the construction of that since they've done all of the work in, you know, designing it and property acquisition.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Johnson?
Thank you for your presentation.
Yeah.
So I have a couple of questions. The first is similar to Mayor Delgado's question about pesticides. I'm curious about constituents of emerging concern, pharmaceuticals, estrogen, et cetera, that you find in normal municipal sewage, and both the efficacy of the process for removal. I also noted in the MRP that there was monitoring of the influent to the advanced treatment plant and monitoring of the water prior to injection. I am just wondering if that turns anything up, kind of what happens, because I didn't see any monitoring. I didn't see any monitoring for constituents of emerging concern at the monitoring wells that are sort of halfway through the transport process through the ground, and I have no idea what a Division of Drinking Water requires for monitoring when it's pulled up. So if you can speak to that, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. And I'll highlight one port, and then I'll turn it over to the other team members. But MRW-PCA and the flows coming into our treatment plant are 90% residential and like 8% commercial and 2% industrial. So it's really a pretty consistent wastewater stream as compared to other wastewater utilities. And so I'll let Shane kind of talk about the efficacies of removal of the CECs.
Good morning again. This is one of the things about this treatment process that allows DDW to be so confident with it. So in 2014, the groundwater recharge regulations came into law. They're now part of the water code. And, you know, when you employ reverse osmosis followed by advanced oxidation, you're at today's method detection limits. So you do not generally find CECs at all, any of them. And when you find them, it's to your benefit to go and look to see if actually somebody took ibuprofen that day or was drinking coffee. I mean, in their very low-level trace amounts and often found to be associated with the chemist error or a field error. I mean, there's nothing in this water at that point. They track online at this facility. We'll have a TOC analyzer, so we look at it as a sort of an indicator of how much organic content in general is in the water, and so they'll have that there real time and use that to give them a sense of how well treated the water is. But this combination of reverse osmosis and advanced oxidation, reverse osmosis really removing all the CECs virtually to non-detect. I mean, we can provide information. There's a lot out there with 100 MGD type plant running. And then if there were to be anything that made it through, that's what the advanced oxidation is for. So the most powerful oxidant known in our industry is then used to attack anything in the water that might be left.
To follow up on the monitoring questions, I don't know if, John, you're going to have it, but we have a permitting person that can answer some of those as well, Denise Connors from...
Hi, I'm Denise Connors with Larry Walker Associates. I work with PCA. I just wanted to clarify on the CEC monitoring. We're following the recycled water policy, the state's recycled water policy that designates how CEC monitoring is conducted. And the CEC monitoring is done for certain types of constituents that are indicators of health-based or performance-based removals and concerns. And the monitoring is required for final recycled water only, but there are a few that have to be done prior to reverse osmosis and post-treatment to compare prior to release of the aquifer. So we're just following what the recycled water policy says and where to take the samples and which indicator constituents to be analyzed.
Okay. My other question regards the discharge. Excuse me. My other question regards the ocean outfall discharge, and I'm assuming that that during the irrigation season, there's going to be a pretty high demand for this water, and I know that. Ultimately, there's even going to be even more demand for the effluent because there's another desal plant in the pipeline. So I guess my question is, sort of, where are we going? And maybe this is a staff question. Where are we going in terms of ensuring that the discharges from the ocean outfall have a sufficiently lower total dissolved solids than the ocean water itself so that we get adequate mixing at the end of the outfall?
The ocean outfall is regulated via the NPDES permit that's already in existence for the regional treatment plant. And our office will be updating that permit prior to the commencement of any discharges from this advanced treatment facility. So all that will be taken into account and regulated via the NPDES permit update.
Okay, and that'll come before us, correct?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Ms. Gray?
I just had a question on the assimilative capacity in the aquifer, and there were some studies apparently that the effluent limits are equal to the applicable water quality objective for each constituent, and that the percentage of reclaimed water in the aquifer equals the percentage of the assimilative capacity. That seems just so spot on. I mean, what's the margin of error in some of those studies?
Okay. Ed Lynn from Todd Groundwater, who's helped us with our modeling of the groundwater, he's going to come up and talk about that. And I think the groundwater capacity issue is something that we've heard before, and he's going to talk about the volume that is out there available.
Well, good thing you brought your village with you.
So the state water, state recycled water policy, you know, allows for up to 10% assimilative capacity use for a single project. So what we did was, working with the Water Master's engineer who has the groundwater flow model, we calculated what the assimilative capacity use would be if the the concentration of the injected water were at the MCLs. And so in doing that, we were looking at kind of a worst-case scenario. And if you look at the algebra, it's a simple algebraic kind of proof that the assimilative capacity use is equal to the percentage of recycled water that's in the basin after it's put in. And so it's hard to kind of go through it without a diagram, but we did that calculation with the groundwater flow model and determined that even when we look at the northern coastal subarea, which is the subarea that's going to be affected by the project the most, that to about 4% of the total groundwater in the basin will be recycled water. And so that equates to a 4% assimilative capacity use.
Okay, thank you. Sure. Then in terms of the future use, including potable water source, what's your timeline associated with that?
So how soon would this be implemented?
Yes.
So, you know, we're receiving bids as we speak, and so once we get the approval from the State Water Resources Control Board on our loan, Construction will start the summer, and completion mid to late 2018.
Thank you. Thanks to you and your team. Thanks for the presentation.
Mr. Young?
Yeah, what's the cost per acre foot to get this water all the way through to those most advanced stages of treatment?
Sure. It's a great question and one we hear a lot. And so, you know, just one of the natures of complexity in this process is that we had to enter into a water purchase agreement not only with Cal-Am but also the Water Management District. And as part of the CPU proceedings, they kind of put a cost cap or a soft cost cap of like $1,700 and 20 acre foot, $1,720 an acre foot of cost of the water. And that's what we're...
So that was a cap imposed, but right. Is that a realistic cap?
Yes. Yeah. Based on all of our estimates and things like that, we feel we can meet that acre foot number.
And how does that compare with the cost for doing desal in this area?
You know, I'm not going to venture into that territory. I think those are more the Cal-Am or the other entities that are efforting on those water supply projects. You know,
okay,
it could be. I think we're very competitive.
I think it's. I've heard the range of 3,000 to 5,000 per acre foot for the desal.
For desal?
Well, yeah, because your rejection rate. You know, you have much higher efficiency with the water that you RO versus seawater, just because of the content of the salt.
Yeah, we're shooting for an 81% recovery.
That was going to be one of my questions. So.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
We're 81% recovery. So if 10 gallons come in, we're going to try to get over 8 gallons back out.
Right. We're at the efficient desal plant is, you know, almost a 50-50 ratio. And, you know, if you get 55, you're doing fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome. Dr. Hunter?
Thank you. I just want to clarify. I'm looking at, in the staff report, there's a map, and I don't think it has a figure number to it, but it's called the facilities location map. But, and I think you referred to this in terms of distribution of this water, some of it going to agricultural use, which is going to be a very important component. But in the map, I see Sand City, Seaside, Delray Oaks, Carmel Valley, Carmel itself, Monterey, and Pacific Grove. Does that suggest that all of those, thank you for putting that up, does that suggest that all of those communities will be receiving benefit from this, the Seaside Aquifer?
Yeah, so storage? That would be the customer base of Cal-Am. They're the ones that would receive the benefit from the advanced purified water. As you noted earlier, that agriculture users, they'll get the benefit of added water that can be gone through, that could go through the tertiary treatment to meet the agriculture recycled water components. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those entities could benefit that way. But, yeah, the green is the Cal-Am customer base.
And that's where requirement for, I think you said, 6 months residency.
Residency.
But your model shows it will be 10 months and possibly a year.
Mm-hmm.
How is that accomplished? Especially if we were to return to extended drought period, how much of this, how much would this area rely on Seaside Aquifer to fill the gap?
Yeah, that's a great question. And then I can kind of explain a little bit of that. So as you saw the ramp down of the river and the Seaside Adjudicated Basin. So my understanding, and perhaps somebody from Cal-Am can expound, but they kind of utilized the Seaside Basin to help supplement the water supply during the summer months. And so, you know, by able to extract more water in the summer months, they could put it through the distribution system to their customers versus, you know, relying totally on mostly the Carmel River has right. been in the past. So right. that's my understanding.
Right. And then one other source I'm curious, and I frankly, I do not recall the status of the rubber dam and the concept of catching high storm event waters. Is that another source? You didn't mention that, the Salinas River itself.
So the Salinas River, as it currently states, is utilized during the summer months for additional water supply for the growers in the purple area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, as Abby talked about earlier, the formation of the GSA, and as they move forward to trying to find solutions for, you know, augmentation of groundwater, things like that, then maybe those resources could be utilized at another time. But mainly the rubber dam is for summertime use when there's water in the river, and luckily we'll be able to use that this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, luckily. All right, thank you.
So thank you, and I just have a couple of supplemental question and response to dovetail a little bit more on Mr. Young. Question in regard to the efficiency, you know, which you said you get over 80% of recycled water output versus seawater RO, which is, you know, 50-55. You also have a much more energy efficient process, mm-hmm. because you basically, for less energy, produce a lot more water. Also, supplementing a little bit Dr. Hunter question about the 6 months residency, I assume, you know, some of the tests that you perform is using radioisotope tracers?
Yeah, there will be some monitoring, you know, as we go through this process, right. of requirements from the Department of Drinking Water.
Right, but that's generally the technology foundation that is used. So this is technical curiosity. You mentioned you had deep wells and shallow wells. So how deep and how shallow?
Well, I'll let Ed take that. I mean, I could give you a rough estimate, but he's the expert.
Right now, our deep injection wells are projected to be about 900 feet deep. And that will be injecting into the Santa Margarita aquifer. And our shallower wells are actually going to be screened above the Paso Robles Formation, which is the shallow aquifer, and the water will come down and percolate and reach the Paso Robles Formation. We'll be screening our monitoring wells in the Paso Robles Formation. I believe it's about 450 feet or so down.
Okay.
So those are the two kind of depths that we'll be completing our monitoring wells.
All right. Thank you very much. So at this time, I think my colleagues and myself, you know, asked questions, and we also have speaker cards. So, yes, Mr. Robertson?
We have a little bit more of a presentation coming back to our staff now.
Okay.
Thank you.
I thought that staff was going to supplement presentation after the speaker card. I mean, I'm totally open, but the reason I state that is that, you know, with some of the speakers, there may be some augmentation and information that you want to provide.
Well,
your call.
What I'm going to suggest is that we have staff finish their presentation. We kind of had the discharger's presentation embedded in the middle, understanding they would give a richer explanation to the board, and then staff will come now to sort of some of the permit elements, and then I think you can, the board can then ask some subsequent questions, and then we can go to the comment cards.
Okay, very good.
Okay, so I'll proceed here. Our basin plan lists the Seaside Basin as having both the municipal and agricultural beneficial uses. The waste discharge requirements in front of you today are designed to protect those beneficial uses and limit the amount of available assimilative capacity consumed by this project. And just to reiterate that what the assimilative capacity really is, it's the difference between the baseline water quality concentrations and the respective maximum contamination limits, or MCLs, which if exceeded would adversely impact the beneficial use of the resource. And the assimilative capacity is really evaluated on a constituent by constituent basis. The discharger demonstrated that if effluent limits were set at the drinking water limits, The beneficial uses of the resource will be adequately protected in accordance with the recycled water policy. These effluent limits will allow the operational flexibility the discharger says they need in order to minimize operational costs while still protecting the beneficial uses of the basin. And at the end of my presentation, I actually have the algebraic equations that board member Gray was inquiring about. So I'll put that up on the screen. You can check it out. Division of Drinking Water and Water Board staff have traditionally collaborated on recycled water projects such as this. Drinking Water staff reviews the discharger's Title 22 engineering report, engages in a back and forth with the discharger until finally approving the report. Division of Drinking Water staff then recommends specific permit requirements, which the Water Board staff incorporates into the waste discharge requirements. Water Board staff and Drinking Water staff confer along the way in the permit development process of projects such as this. In this case, the discharger submitted extensive comments, and Drinking Water staff and Water Board staff both responded to those comments. Due to the evolving nature of this project, the Title 22 engineering report will need to be revised and reapproved by both DDW and the executive officer prior to the commencement of groundwater recharge activities. Due to the change characteristics of the waste that will be entering the ocean outfall, our office will be amending the NPDES permit, as I said earlier, prior to commencement of waste discharges from this project. I also want to make you aware that there's another, and you probably are aware, but I just want to make sure that there's another desal project that's coming down the pike that will generate another waste stream that will also go into the same outfall. And that may require another NPDES permit update if it's not accounted for in the next one to come. Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency submitted the most extensive comment letter with 23 comments and another 12 non-substantive comments. As I said, Water Board staff and Drinking Water staff both reviewed and responded to the comments. California American Water submitted a comment letter that contained just 4 comments, and the Seaside Basin Water Master submitted a comment letter which was dated January 12, 2017, but for whatever reason was not received by the Water Board until the Water Master noticed that we did not respond to their letter along with the other comment letters, at which point they provided us with a copy of their letter. The Water Master's comment letter contained just 3 comments and 2 requests, all of which are found in the supplemental sheet for this item, along with our responses. The supplemental sheet also contains additional changes requested by the discharger after the official comment period. These late changes were agreed to by both Division of Drinking Water staff and the Water Board staff, and the supplemental also includes some typo corrections at the very end. No comments were received in opposition to the project. So in conclusion, this order includes an extensive monitoring program and it protects the beneficial uses of the Seaside Basin aquifer. The project will make use of waters that would otherwise be wasted and is just the kind of project, frankly, that we like to see. The Seaside Basin aquifer will be replenished and the potable water supply enhanced. Additional agricultural irrigation water will also be made available from the regional treatment plant, as shown on this map that we've seen, I think, 3 times now. So staff recommends that you adopt this order. That concludes staff's presentation, and we'll be happy to field questions now.
John, you mentioned the math portion of this presentation. You want to jump to the math slide?
Back to the map?
Math. Mathematics.
Oh, the math. Math. Sorry,
algebra.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, board member Gray has...
Yeah.
Board member Gray's got her calculator all warmed up.
Yeah, that's my favorite subject.
Right. There we go. They do, actually.
This was one of the best applications of algebra that I've seen since school, frankly. It is very illuminating.
Can you run us through an example? Just kidding.
Appreciate the slide. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. So I'm looking at my left. Any questions? Yes, Mayor Delgado.
I think it was in the staff report mentioned that there had been some disagreements between the project proponent and the water board here, and that most but not all of those had been resolved. So I just wanted to ask, is there an update, any outstanding disagreement?
No, I believe we're in agreement on everything now.
Thank you.
Thank you. So at this time, I do have three speaker cards. And I will start with Mr. Shimmick, followed by Mr. Ron Weitzman. 3 minutes each.
Don't hit that button before I get up to the podium, Tammy.
Okay, we'll credit you 2 seconds.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Steve Shimmick, Executive Director of the Otter Project and Monterey Coast Keeper. This is a great project if it's improved just a little bit. My concern is the loading of nitrogen to the nearshore ocean environment, which much current research, local research, shows triggers harmful algal blooms, kills sea otters, thousands of oceanic birds and mammals, and closes fisheries like the Dungeness crab fishery. While there are many contributing factors to nitrates and nitrogen in the ocean, such as global warming and the strength of upwelling, current research supports the belief that anthropogenic sources of nitrogen contribute and trigger harmful algal blooms, especially the frequency of harmful algal blooms. In the EIR, it has these two statements that I think, so I'm worried about where the nitrogen is. Remember, these are nitrogen-rich source waters, so you need to think about that waste stream of nitrogen. The EIR contains these statements. These are actually the answers to questions in the EIR. Because growers incur substantial costs to purchase and apply fertilizers, it is reasonable to presume, based on economics, that growers would reduce the use of fertilizer if irrigation water provided a significant portion of the required macronutrients for optimal plant growth. You have much data to the contrary of that statement. A lot, and I'll come back to that if you'd like. And then what it says is, so now we're talking about the load of nitrogen going into the ocean. So it says, further, while the concentration of nitrogen and phosphorus in the, I'll skip the acronym, ocean discharge would increase, it is important to note that the net nutrient loading to the ocean from the region would decrease due to the proposed project, taking into account the diversion of the agricultural drainage waters and the reduction of agricultural fertilizer use. So they are literally relying upon that use of nitrogen to show that there's any reduction in the nitrogen at all. You've got, if they were using if the growers in the region were using that nitrogen, what you would expect to see is nitrogen depletion in the ultimate ditch before it goes out to the ocean. And instead, what you see is that that ultimate ditch, which is the old Salinas River channel, is 3 to 6 times the drinking water standard with nitrogen. Finally, you've got the total nitrogen applied reports that show that vast amounts of nitrogen are being applied, which essentially compounds the problem of nitrogen. They aren't using a nitrogen. What I suggest as a solution, if I can just get one more sentence in, suggest as a solution is that once you get to that NPDES permit, you actually require a reduction in load over the current state of nitrogen and require them to do something. And there are technologies available to reduce the nitrogen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shimek. Next speaker card is Mr. Ron Weitzman, and then followed by Bill Carruthers.
Good afternoon. Started out in the morning. It's Ron Weitzman, and I'm going to finish up what I started to say earlier. The delay occasioned by the absence of a permitted or perhaps impermissible means for the Monterey Pipeline to traverse Highway 68 at Mark Thomas Drive provides you and the Division of Drinking Water an opportunity to fill in some important blanks in your project review. The criteria you have applied so far derive from Title 22, which concerns the recycling only of sewer water. The source water for Pure Water Monterey also includes toxic agricultural runoff and wash water, containing possibly dangerous amounts of diazinon, chlorpyrifos, and DDT and its derivatives, as well as other pesticides that accumulate in fatty tissue and are highly toxic to human beings. None of your criteria for acceptable product water applies to any of these pesticides. If that is because the state has not yet established such criteria, you have an opportunity now to wait until it does. Both you and the Division of Drinking Water of the State Water Board have a conflict of interest in permitting the Pure Water Monterey project because the State Water Board established a very milestone deadline. Expeditious issuance of your order would be helping that project to meet. Now, however, you have time to exercise additional caution. RAMP urges you to do so. It is one thing for water ratepayers to experience rate increases to save the lives of fish, something RAMP supports. It is quite another to risk killing or injuring human beings to save the lives of other species. Nothing like this project has ever been done before. It is truly an experiment. RAMP urges you to take this opportunity to make sure, 100% sure, the project, if not entirely risk-free to human health and safety, at least entails the lowest possible acceptable risk supported by independent, peer-reviewed research. The buck stops at your doorstep. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. And I was going to ask staff to comment back as a group rather than individually, if that's okay, Ms.
I was just going to acknowledge procedurally that the last commenter submitted two documents. They came in after the comment period. They also came in after the deadline for submittal of information, so they will not be distributed to the board or included in the record for this waste discharge requirement.
Thank you for that note, Mr. Robertson. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. I'm Bill Carruthers from Salinas, California. We have here a perfect example of the perfect is the enemy of the good. And we already have the good, and this project is overdue. California is cursed with the most dysfunctional groundwater laws ever conceived by the mind of our friends, the attorneys. And the curse of our groundwater management program has been it was the cheapest source of water $80 to maybe $200 a acre foot. That's why it got pumped to death by so many places. If we're going to have a future in agriculture, there's going to be a revolution in our generation in the Salinas Valley, or this will be the last one. I look forward to this as a marvelous application of men of goodwill overcoming enormous chicanery, deceit, gamesmanship, self-serving nonsense, and so forth, which has plagued so many problems in history. If you look at the development of the Bay Bridge and realize how long the ferry owners fought successfully this project, we have the similar situation here. Let this good work begin. It has waited too long. It is ready now at last.
Thank you for your comment. And before moving into debate from the board, Mr. Robertson, do you and your staff have additional response to some of the public comments and concluding remarks?
I guess the first point I would like to make is that this is not some kind of experimental project. These technologies are well known. This is the most sort of extensive coupling of these technologies that I've seen personally in these recycled water projects, and I'm very confident of the quality of water that this project will be able to produce. As was explained earlier, the pesticides that were one of the commenters' main concerns are going to be removed down to far below detection levels in the 99% range, something like that. So far below World Health Organization standards, far below drinking water limits. It's going to be treated and taken out of there. I'm very confident of that. With regard to the CECs, yes, we keep an eye on those because they're, as the acronym implies, they're of emerging concern. But these are things like, caffeine and sucralose that we really don't have established maximum contaminant limits for yet. So they're just, in my mind, they're kind of informational. There's not like if it hits a certain number, the alarm bells are going to go off and we're going to require new treatment or something because those levels aren't established yet. But we are keeping an eye on them in this project. And, that data will be available as time goes on to take a look at. And if as time goes on there are limits established, then we'll go back and readdress them in this project. But there's an extensive monitoring program here that I think is very adequate. I'm sure the discharger thinks it's overkill, but some things we insisted on, like influent monitoring, so that we can get a sense of how efficient this whole operation is doing at removing constituents. The influent limits aren't necessarily required via Title 22, but we as the Water Board decided we really wanted to take a look and make sure this thing was operating efficiently. I hope that addresses the majority of the speaker's comments.
So I want to reiterate a point that Mr. Rocky makes. The technologies utilized here are not cutting edge. No disrespect intended. They're just not cutting edge. They're state of the art, but they're also very well tested. As an example, a lot of the technologies used in this process will be used in the UCLA pilot project on a drinking water supply project in this region at three different sites. I also want to comment on Mr. Schimmick's request that we address nitrate. That would be appropriate for the forthcoming MPDES permit revision and review, and not necessarily appropriate in this forum.
Thank you for that clarification. So at this point, I'd like to hear if my colleagues have any further question on this item. You know, I guess the only thing I would say when we often talk about chemical of emerging concern, pharmaceuticals, you know, tend to come to mind, you know, caffeine. I think this morning I was at 2 million parts per million. It's a moving issue, and I think Mr. Moore, who's representing State Board, you know, has a group that specifically, constantly works on this particular big challenge. So wrapped up my views on it. So do you have an additional question, Mr.?
I have a comment.
Okay. Yeah, please do.
I recall that I think it was our last meeting, maybe two meetings ago, we addressed a Pacific Grove recycled water project, which I thought was commendable. And I think this is even more so because it takes all of this wastewater that's formerly unused and puts it to good use in reducing the overdraft of the Carmel River, helping the farmers of the north so they're not pumping as much, all from the start of wastewaters that haven't been used in this area prior to this project for good purposes. So I think it's a commendable project.
Dr. Hunter?
Yes, this is just a general comment. You know, some of you who know me and the work that I've done in the Carmel Valley and Monterey region generally, this has not been an easy process. And I see Ms. Stedman back in the back of the room, one individual who's been there for, in many ways, a part of the community process. And the leadership that emerged around the water issues and also the vision for a regional water supply solution, that is unique in California. And I can tell you the folks in the southern end of the state can't even conceive of how this region has reached this. I've had these conversations just in the last month with people saying, with all this water, why aren't we moving forward with you know, infrastructure to capture it before it goes to the ocean? I'm astounded. They're not aware of how much has gone on in the Monterey, greater Monterey area. So I agree with my colleagues that this is a project that we want to see go forward. Is it perfect? No. Will we have opportunities to continue to see where the technology, you know, what the extent and limits of technology are, and will technology continue to improve? I'm banking on that. But in the meantime, I think reduction of pumping on the Carmel has been one of the most complicated problems I encountered as I became involved with coastal watersheds and the water supply issue. So I'm very pleased and very supportive of this, and just want to thank the staff who showed up today from these different agencies to help us understand the complexities of this project. And to our staff, thank you very much for your work.
Yeah, and this morning we had a discussion, particularly, you know, updates from State Board on SGMA and, you know, how to address sustainability in groundwater basin. And I mentioned that I viewed it as being a three-legged stool: water augmentation, water conservation, and innovation. And I think this project certainly address water augmentation and innovation. So thank you for that. So at this time, I'd like to see, I think we're ready to vote. So do we have a motion? We have one motion. Do we have a second?
A second.
A second. Any further discussion?
So I wanted to make a comment about CEQA. Sure. I think that Ramps and Ron Weitzman's comments were about a bridge that perhaps has not had the appropriate CEQA review, but I didn't see that related to what we're doing here today. And I'm sorry I didn't ask staff earlier, but can you comment on our role versus the CEQA concern expressed by Mr. Weitzman?
I believe that the order in front of you today is for permitting the quality of water that's going to be reinjected into the basin. So the alignment of the pipeline that goes between the advanced water purification facility and the injection well array is not part of this undertaking, and that's for the discharger to work out. You know, if there's problems with Caltrans and the particular bridge or something, that's not part of the order that's in front of us today.
So whether
if I could just add to that, my understanding from the discharger is that the pipeline in question is a potable water pipeline that is within the scope of a different CEQA document, so it's a different project. The discharger could answer any questions better than I could.
Okay, so my final question on that is whether or not there's CEQA compliance yet on this project. That doesn't affect what we're doing today.
I think that's a better question for Lori. I don't believe so.
Yeah, actually, it's a better question for the discharger, but my understanding is the CEQA document for this project is already certified. The project is already approved, and we're approving it as a responsible agency. The issues related to the bridge are a different project.
Okay. Yeah, I would like to hear the discharger's comment on this. Especially since she hasn't spoken yet today.
Thanks. Thanks, I get a chance to talk.
We
go, Thank
we
you.
Got the whole village, 100%.
My name is Allison Imamura. I'm an associate engineer at the Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency. I was involved in the EIR preparation phase. The pipeline that Mr. Weitzman commented on, it's a CalAM, California American Water Company pipeline. The pipeline had been approved as part of the Pure Water Monterey program because it does provide a benefit to getting water from the basin to potable water users. It's not actually, just to correct John's statement, it's not actually the pipe that carries the water from the advanced treatment plant to the groundwater basin. The pipeline's currently under construction. Last year it was approved by the Water Management District, our partner, in their approval of the CalAM distribution system permit. They acted as a responsible agency using our EIR. Also, the California Public Utilities Commission approved the facility, and their approval was in September. And they also acted as a responsible agency using our EIR. The next discretionary approval for that pipeline is, my understanding, will be Caltrans. And so Mr. Weitzman's comments would be best directed to Caltrans. You nor the Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency have any more discretionary approval of that facility.
Thank you, everybody.
Does this answer your question? And any further comments? So we had a motion, we had a second, so now we're ready for a vote. I would like to ask for roll call.
Dr. Wolf?
Approved.
Dr. Hunter?
Yes.
Cervantes? Mr. Delgado?
Yes.
Ms. Gray?
With pleasure, yes.
Mr. Johnston?
Yes.
Mr. Young?
Yes.
Thank you.
Right. Motion approved unanimously. So thank you, everyone, for your hard work. And that includes the permittees and also our staff. So thank you, everyone. We will now take a recess of 1 hour. In closed session, I would like you to make an announcement.
We have two closed session items. One is the Zamora matter, 19.6 on the agenda, and the other is the Plains Pipeline, 19.9 on the agenda.
So we will reconvene in 1 hour. Thank you.